Just to play us out now, there is Rogan Taylor, who from the University of Liverpool, and he's written books before about Puskás and the Hungary team of 1954. So I was chatting to him a couple of weeks ago before the tournament, and here is that interview. All right, delighted to be joined by Rogan Taylor of the University of Liverpool, director of the Football Industry Group, and also author of Puskás on Puskás, a very definitive guide on one of the world's greatest players of all time. Rogan, first off, welcome along. And I guess to maybe start off, you know, Hungary is a Central European nation. Just at the time where they first reached a World Cup final in 1938, to give a bit of a backdrop to the culture in terms of football, this is cafe culture, because I know Vienna, which is obviously just over the border, there's that kind of theme where football was intellectualized. And I wonder, is Hungary kind of similar in that era?
Yeah, it is. I mean, of course, it was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which collapsed really with the end of the First World War. And so Hungary was also very closely connected with southern Germany. I mean, Puskás isn't his real name. His father was called Purzelt, P-U-R-Z-E-L-D, and they changed it in the 1920s. His father changed it to Puskás, so it sounded more Hungarian. It's a hard thing for people like us who live on islands to imagine how one's country can be sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller, you know, cover different territories and so on. And the football which emerged had a very strong Austrian influence, and some very, very modern and talented coaches who began to develop the roots of the kind of football which was beginning to emerge in the late 30s. I mean, if the Second World War hadn't have turned up, the Hungarians may well have won it earlier. Of course, those are the days when England or none of the UK nations would have deigned to take part in something like a World Cup. They had to wait till 1950, didn't they, to get out there. And that has all got a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, certainly.
Straight away, as they were sent home after two matches when they were beaten by a bunch of really ex-third division English players who'd become American citizens. So, you know, when Hungary rose, it rose in the ashes of that Second World War disaster, where, you know, the Russians fought the Germans face-to-face right the way through Budapest, and you know, blew up all the bridges, and the whole town was a war zone for a number of months. And that's when, you know, Puskás reached the age of 16 and started to play football for Kispest, a rather small working-class team that was then just slightly outside of the Budapest. And his father played for them. And one of Puskás's earliest memories is lying in a cot, aged three, he thinks, and hearing the roar of the crowd from the Kispest Stadium and thinking, gosh, I wonder what's going on over there.
Yeah, and the way society kind of works then post-World War II in Hungary, obviously it's the Soviet influence, and in like a lot of other countries, you have army teams, you have the police team, the state security team. Honved becomes, I believe, the army team, and obviously Puskás is on that side of the fence. How significant is that in the development of that generation of Hungarian players?
Oh, extraordinarily significant, because here's you know, some very knowledgeable coaches like Sebesh and others, who you know, was a good communist who'd worked in the car factories of France, organizing the unions in the 1930s. So good connections with the government, and when they discovered this jewel in the crown which they had, which was Puskás, along with a whole bunch of other brilliant players, not to mention, you know, Hidiguti, Kosice, Seabor, the goalkeeper, I've forgotten his name for a moment, but, you know, this was a pretty wonderful team. And, of course, the state could organize things accordingly. I mean, prior to that epoch-making game with England, when in 1953, when England, who, let's remember, hadn't been beaten on home soil by continental opposition since 1066. You know, faced up to the 1953 Hungarian side of Puskás and all his mates, and lost 6-3. And that's when I woke up to Puskás, because my ma had bought a telly to watch the coronation that summer. Mm. And that match was broadcast live at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We were sent home from Dovedale Road School by our headmaster to watch it if we had a telly. How about that? That's how important that game yeah. was. And of course, we saw football for the first time, and this was a result of, at least partly a result, of corralling all the best football players into one team, Kispest Honved, as it became, the army team, hence the Honved, that was the army name. And of course, that meant that you could draft all the best players into one team. They're playing together every week. And prior to playing against England, they actually organised a whole bunch of fixtures against other Hungarian teams, where the other Hungarian teams had to imitate the pattern of play that the English adopted, with their wide wingers, with their Tom Finney and Stanley Matthews and so on, and a single number nine centre forward. So, you know, tremendous government organisation and help from the very top. And that meant that they got everything they needed. And of course, they became, for my money, the greatest team that ever lived.
Yeah, so when you're watching that 1953 match of the century, so that's the Wembley game, and that's prior to the return game that took place the following year, the 7-1.
7-1,
you know,
yes.
You'd been watched, I'm sure you'd watched a bit of football, obviously, back home in England, but when you're looking at this Hungarian team, the Magical Magyars, is this something out of this world in terms of the way they're playing, in terms of the style?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's very interesting. The commentator, good old Ken Wusterholm, didn't have words to describe what they did. I mean, the third goal, which is, you know, absolutely wonderful goal. Typically, the left winger Seabor is dancing down the right wing with Budai playing 1-2s before the ball gets crossed into the sort of right hand side of the 6 yard box, where Puskás, supposedly the inside left, receives it, and then he does something. He does a drag back. The only thing was, no one had seen a drag back before. And when he drags it back and shoots and past the near side of Gil Merrick in that wonderful, you know, third goal, Wusterholm said he calls it a back heel.
Yeah.
And of course it isn't. He drags the ball back and shoots simultaneously. We know, because we've watched Messi and we've watched, you know, guys who do that stuff now. But that was the first time anybody had ever seen. There's another moment when the ball gets bounced off the body of Jimmy Dickinson to run round him. Hungarian player is Bozsik, who's facing a defender who's going to tackle him, and he bounces the ball off an England player to the left and runs around Jimmy Dickinson to pick it up. You know, and there's a hiccup in the Wusterholm commentary, and he says, "That was a lucky bounce." Yeah. Because you can't see what you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's what that football was like. I mean, I was in that front room, with my communist friend, a son of a big communist family. We were both, 9 years old. And my communist friend threw his hat in the air and shouted, "Socialist football!" And the next day in, you know, Dovedale Road School, in the yard before the whistle went, you know, at 9 o'clock, we'd all be kicking around in a five-a-side. And, you know, as soon as we got it, everyone, you know, I said, "I'm Ed Agouti, who are you?" "I'm Puskás." You know, everybody forgot about Stanley Matthews and Tom Finney. Yeah. We wanted to be them, because we'd never seen football like that.
Yeah, we were talking to, just on our show, Johan Naeskens about 2 years ago, and he was also involved, obviously, in that Dutch team of the 70s that were, well, obviously it's called Total Football, but that were seen to revolutionise the game, and they did impact future sides, and we still see that in the echoes of Barcelona. With Hungary, was it, did we see imitators arriving pretty quickly?
Oh, well, who do you think Ajax were imitating?
Yes, yeah.
You know, I mean, what they call total football was their version of this free flow. I mean, there was only one position in the Hungarian team, and that was the number nine, you know, Idiguti. Everyone else twirled round him. Like, they called it the whirlpool. And, you know, in my, what, 67, nearly coming up 65 years of watching football, I've only seen five epoch-making football teams. You know, and the first was Hungary, of course, or Kispest Omved, whichever way you want to look at it. The second was, of course, Ajax. The third was, you know, that wonderful Italian team of the late 80s.
Yeah.
Milan. Inter Milan. And of course, the fourth was Barcelona. You know, and in my entire... These guys set the geography for football, for the decade following.
Yeah.
It's revolutionary, and that's what the Hungarians did for the first time. They started it.
Was there an immediate effect in England to kind of try and root these principles?
Oh, yes. Now? I mean, all of those great managers of the 60s, you know, Busby and Shankly and what's his name, Ferguson, you know, that's when their mentalities were formed. They're my age. You know,
yeah,
or indeed they were older and are now gone. But yeah, everybody saw that and thought, right, what do we do? You know, and so that whole kind of those great Liverpool side and the subsequent Manchester side, you know, so on. These were all based upon this great footballing revolution. It was the foundation stone of post-modern football.
Yeah, so they take this style to the World Cup then in 54, and they trash West Germany 8-3 in the group stage, and they obviously go on to play them in the final, which obviously doesn't work out well, as history will tell us. Puskás gets injured in that game, or he suffers a bit of an ankle injury, and he's then missing for parts of the remainder of the tournament.
Oh, it was a complete disaster. I mean, it was so sad. And even then, you know, if the English linesman had been a bit more accurate, they would have probably equalised in the final match. Because you're right, Puskás played in the first game. The Germans sorted him out. The Hungarians beat them 8-3. And then, of course, met the Germans again in the final on a very muddy pitch, which never suited, like, just like it wouldn't suit a Barcelona of today. Yeah. Can you imagine playing on a quagmire of mud with very little grass on it? And they lost to the Germans. And, I mean, that was the beginning of the end. I mean, when they got back, they were they were definitely in the shadow. And, of course, Kocsis and Puskás and Tibor bailed out and left Hungary forever.
Yeah.
Puskás, of course, wandering around Italy for a while. He was banned by FIFA. He was banned by the Hungarian FA. I couldn't believe it, really. And of course, he was getting a bit podgy. And everyone thought, well, he's had 10 years, great player. He's one of the greatest players in the world, if not the greatest player. It's probably all over now. And what does he get? 10 years with Real Madrid. You know. I mean, this is like when God was giving out great footballing lives.
Yeah.
Two dollops fell off the spoon when Puskás turned up, you know?
And either of
those two 10-year periods make him the greatest player you've ever seen.
Yeah,
and you know, that's how great he is. People don't know because it's just about pre-television.
Yeah.
But for my money, he's your man.
Yeah, and just actually, you mentioned that period of exile where he's kind of wandering outside of Hungary after this Hungarian Revolution takes place. And knowing him, was this period kind of weighing on him on the mental side?
He was absolutely heartbroken. I mean, there he was, 30, 31, finished, always liked his food, especially lard on bread.
Yeah, not a sportsman's kind of diet.
not a sportsman's diet at all. And you know, and it looked like it was over. And it was only, you know, Bernabeu himself, the man who gave the name to Real Madrid Stadium. You know, Bernabeu loved Puskás, and you know, found him in that position and said, "Listen, if you can get on with Di Stefano, who was the main man, of course, for Madrid at the time, and a very prickly personality. But Puskás had a great intelligence. He was not well educated, of course, he was not well read, but he had a sharp brain. Of course, he had a sharp brain. Look at the football he played. How do you do that without a sharp brain? But he was also clever with people, and he understood Di Stefano, the greatest player in the world at the time, number 9 for Real Madrid, and here they were bringing in this Hungarian, and he knew he had to get this relationship right. And when they joined up, he lost his excess weight pretty quickly, Puskás, and kicked off in whenever it was, 1957, I think, or 58, alongside Di Stefano. And the two of them immediately became top goal scorers. You know, bang, 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 bang. They're both of them banging them in. On the last match of that first season that Puskás is playing, they're absolutely equal. I think they scored 50 goals each, or late 40s in numbers. And there's about 10 minutes to go, and they're through on goal, both Puskás with the ball, and Di Stefano just dropped slightly behind him. And Puskás can run on and just lash it in, but he lays it off for Di Stefano. For the next 6 seasons, Puskás is top scorer. But for that season, he gives it to Di Stefano as in with respect, you know?
Yeah.
And that makes them the greatest of friends, those two. And of course, you know, such a brilliant partnership that made, well, they won 5 European Cups on the trot, didn't they? Real Madrid, nobody could get near them.
Yeah, as we kind of touched on, the 54 World Cup obviously eludes them, and he does score in the final, Puskás, but were Hungary slightly over-reliant on him, or was it more the issue of the pitch, and the other issues that have since kind of emerged?
Inevitably, they were, you know, a Barcelona over-reliance on Messi, you know. Doesn't mean to say they haven't got a bloody good team, and they'd beat most people on the night. I think the same was true of that Puskás team. He was the diamond in the crown, but it was a crown full of jewels. And, I think it's a whole series of things went quite badly wrong for them. I think the weather in particular was probably crucial. And the Germans, who were, of course, all taking speed at the time, they were all taking amphetamines, by order of the government. The Germans just really kicked him off the park, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Mm. And I suppose to as a final question, the effect, we kind of touched on it, of the Hungarian Revolution in terms of Puskás going and a couple of others leaving as well. And the structures were probably still there in terms of, what the Soviet Union and the Soviet takeover had kind of left. So why was
no,
there...
No, the structures weren't as in a desperate state.
Yeah.
And of course now, you can't compete if you haven't got the market. That's why Holland can't compete. That's why Ajax can't compete. That's why Bayer Ferencvaros can't compete. This is what happens now that the money that you can generate, particularly via the television values, of course, is so limited. You're in a country, what is the population of Hungary these days? It's about 8-9 million people, with 6 million of them living in Budapest.
Yeah.
You know, what they need to do is form together leagues. You know, you should get Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, you know, Serbia, Croatia in a league. And then you've got some real television coverage, some real commercial interest, because you're hitting proper big numbers. And these countries produce fabulous footballers, and they hate each other, which is essential, really, for making the football business work, isn't it?
Yeah, so even as far back as 56, then, the structures have fallen completely.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, they were collapsing.
Unfortunately, yeah. But at least we have the team to remember, of course.
We do, indeed. Oh, yeah. I mean, no one will ever forget. No one who is alive or knows anything about football, really, who wants to know about the tactical evolution of the game in the post-war period, in this last 60, 70 years, it's Hungary.
Yeah.
It's Kispestonved. It's Puskás.
Mm. Well, the name always stands out. Rogan Taylor, thanks a million for taking
the time. You're very welcome, mate.
And obviously your book is Puskás on Puskás and heavily recommended. All right, that was Rogan Taylor of the University of Liverpool, the football section of that. And obviously talking a bit there about Hungary and the Hungary 1954 and Ferenc Puskás. So that's it for this week's show. Of course, listeners, you know how this game between England and Colombia panned out. As I'm speaking now, I don't. But anyway, that's it. Derek Ryan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Raph.
Killian Woods.
Thanks, Raph.
Joe Coffey.
Raph, pleasure as always.
Take it away, Johan.